Hey guys, welcome to the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. In this episode, we talk about some less than fun adventures in urban fishing, how to be a mediocre Florida angler like myself, and what not to do when you've got a grumpy fishing guide looking over your shoulder. Stick around. Hey guys, I want to bring you a quick message from our sponsor, SmartLink Alarm. An Arizona-based company with over 30 years of experience, SmartLink Alarm provides custom security systems for your home or business. What we really dig about these guys is they have no contracts and super affordable monthly rates. From now until April 1st, we've got a fun promo going on with these guys. Give them a call and let them know your security concerns. Mention the Angler's Happy Hour podcast and you'll receive a free quote. Receiving the quote will enter you into a drawing for a free guided fishing trip with one of us. If you're lucky, Rob will be your guide. If you're unlucky, it'll be Nick. And you don't want to fish with Nick, trust me. We appreciate the fact that we have listeners across the entire country, but this promo is going to be geared towards the local Arizona listeners, with SmartLink Alarm servicing Arizona residents and businesses only. To enter and receive a free quote, call 480-844-0333 or visit them online at smartlinkalarm.com.
Donuts.
Donuts.
We got donuts. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. We are coming to you in a little bit different fashion than normal. It is still dark outside, super early in the morning.
It's 3 a.m. in Hawaii.
So we'll let
you
do the math.
Not that we're in Hawaii, but just saying. It's probably like 11 p.m. in China, too, but we're also not there.
It is an early morning, and things are just getting busy on all fronts for us, so we're doing our best to try to keep doing this once a week, and if we sound a little bit groggy, that's why. Rob was the nice guy and brought some donuts, and
Rob brought donuts, Josh brought us maple syrup energy packets, and I don't know what I brought, but my presence
you brought a smile,
is a present,
dude, so
that's right.
Thanks for
I've
that.
I've been using that for about 11 years now, my marriage, when birthdays, anniversaries, and Christmas rolls around. This presence is a present. Not working great, though, so I would not take any romantic advice from me.
That's hilarious. Yeah, try that with your kids and see what they say. Dude.
Yeah.
They're not going to be happy.
We tried to squash the whole guy in a red suit coming down the chimney myth, and I think 4 and 6 is still a little too early for that.
That's only jacked up to do that too.
Yeah, what's that about, dude?
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it's one of those things where they're going to find out eventually, and it's kind of a double standard, right? Like, you're not allowed to lie, but by the way, but so here's the redeeming factor in all this, because then I was like, well, now they're going to go around and like ruin it for everyone else's kids. Quite the contrary. What happens is that it's still so force spoon fed down them that they just look for proof to prove me wrong. They're like, no, dude, like my son, who's 4 years
old.
Yeah,
they're having
like one of the, you know, I think it's like the assistant principal's husband came and dressed as Santa Claus. And that day he's like, no, dad, Santa came today. See, you're wrong.
You're brutal.
And that's when I was like, all right, dude, you're allowed to win.
You
like,
just let him have it.
Oh, yeah. At that point, I already kind of felt like, you know, subpar. And then that helped push me down into like, you know, the Bush League ranks of parenting. So, yeah, I don't even know where that rant came from, but I would let the magic of Christmas simmer on.
Nick's got a secret like animosity towards Christmas because his birthday is so close to Christmas. When he was a kid, he probably didn't get to experience the full of both events. So now he's like, well, if I didn't get it, you're not going to get it, kids.
And as a raging narcissist in recovery, I think you're exactly right. My birthday wasn't, because you know, your birthday is your day. Right.
What day is it?
December 27th.
Yeah, you got screwed.
So if you want to,
that's where it all comes horrible. From right yep. there.
If yep. everybody wants to feel bad for me for a little bit longer, I'd appreciate that. And when you hear this, so my birthday is 2 days after Christmas, that of which I share with my brother, who is 4 years older than me, not a twin. I don't know how my parents planned that one out, but not bad. And then my stepmom also has December 27th for her birthday. So
Look at the bright side. You get it all out of the way.
Well, that is a bright side. I need more attention, not less attention.
All right. That's why we started this podcast.
Yep.
Attention. Just kidding.
Yeah, but it's true.
So what else has been going on? I've been out of town. Nick, what have you been up to? Where have you been?
Yeah, man. Well, besides being elbows deep in diapers, I took the kids to the, I don't know, I think it's been 3 or 4 years ago now, we actually got a pretty large aquarium that opened up in Phoenix. It's actually in Scottsdale, and we're always annual pass holders on that. And I took them last weekend, and that place is pretty cool. Josh, I know you and I have been there before. Rob, have you ever been to that Odyssey Aquarium?
No, I was waiting until they brought back the dolphins. But
well, and I mean, rest in peace, dolphins. I mean, who would the atrocity to bring dolphins to the desert? But it's really cool, man. Check it out. It's kind of expensive, but then when you see like the scope of what they have going on there, it's pretty cool. But
it is cool. It really is.
I think my favorite tank there, they have a, like the theme there is like moving from freshwater to saltwater, like the path that rain follows to get to the ocean. And the freshwater tanks are pretty cool. They have a sturgeon tank where you can touch them and they're just like swimming in a oval shaped tank. That's pretty cool. But my favorite is the one that has, it used to have bass in it, but I don't know what happened, but it's got like crappie, bluegill, various species of catfish, gar. Am I missing anything in that?
I don't think so. That's your favorite with all the exotic stuff they've got. Well, it's cool, man.
The one with tarpon and shark is pretty cool, but I don't know why. Like, there's probably like a 20 or 25 pound flathead in that tank. And it's so cool because he lives in this one little nook and cranny under a log. Like, you can hardly see him.
Where he should be.
Right?
Where you'd think he would be.
Living up to his hype. And when I was there, there was a, I don't know, like a 9 or 10 year old little boy there. And you could tell he digs it. And, like, I think they go there a lot. And so he was, like, calling his shots. He's like, oh, look at that, you know, blue catfish. And so he caught me off guard because he knew his species. So I was like, dude, you see the flathead in there? And it was cool because he was like, where? And then I showed it to him. He's like, oh.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was pretty neat. That
little fisherman.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to be like, hey, man, there's a podcast. And if
tell
you
all
should
your
check
friends.
It out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tell your friends in third grade. If you could subscribe, it'd be great. Giant alligator there. And the story behind him is pretty cool, too. Apparently, he was out patrolling a golf course somewhere in Florida. And there's a law there, and they can clarify that for us, all of our Florida listeners. But essentially, like, once something gets deemed a nuisance, they work with maybe like an animal control group where they can actually get a license to kill it. And so they went through this process, and the company that they hired, or however this guy got involved, instantly realized that this is like an incredible specimen. He's over 8 feet long, or no, excuse me, 14 feet long, over 800 pounds. I mean, they call him Big Mike.
Yeah,
I believe.
That's right. Yep.
Dude, he is
huge.
Absolutely.
And that's at the aquarium?
Yeah.
Really?
It's cool, dude. They've got a bunch of
it's
stuff.
It's like a 3.5 hour experience without kids having to like eat snacks and like hit the play area hard. It is well worth it. It's like $100 or something, I think, for one day's admission.
45 a person.
Okay. Yeah.
Roughly.
Sure. It is. Yeah. And I'm thinking 100 because I've got to buy like 5 tickets.
Yep.
So that makes sense. But yeah, Big Mike is worth the trip too. I mean, when you see something, could you imagine like walking down the fairway next to a water hazard and then he just like pops out? Woo.
That's a monster.
Yeah.
He's cool.
Yeah. It's cool. So yeah, I mean, for people that don't live in Arizona, book a flight, fly out here, and go to that aquarium. I'm just kidding. That probably would be a little underwhelming. But if you do live here, check it out. It's cool.
Right on, man. Yeah, and how about you, Rob? What do you got going on?
I did a guide trip yesterday at Roosevelt. Fishing was underwhelming. It was pretty tough overall.
Just to continue with this pattern we've been experiencing all winter in Arizona.
It's typical January. You know, we just didn't land on a big school. We caught a few here and there, caught them all deep. Pretty much what you'd expect, you know, for Roosevelt. But
good times are coming, though, right?
They are.
I mean, Roosevelt's showing so many positive signs.
Yeah.
One day doesn't reflect
the
potential there.
But on a bright side, I mean, the day was beautiful. It was nice and calm and probably 60 degrees and heavy fog in the morning, which we're not used to in Arizona. But that cleared off, and it was just a nice, pretty day. I had a good time. So
you have cool clients?
Great clients, yep. Yep.
That makes any day that's a little bit slow better.
Yeah, and I mean, he knew going in. It was just an individual client. He knew going in it was not going to be gangbusters, but it was, you know, it kept us busy catching them. So
what was the water color like, man? Is it continuing to clear?
Yeah, it's a really
from when we were there last time.
I don't think it's getting any clearer, but like the middle of the lake's a real good color. So I believe the lake is coming up quite a bit, though, and that, you know, attributes to probably a little tougher bite this time of year. Those fish get a little messed up when the water's going over their head, I think, especially deep fish.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't know where to position. Do you agree with that?
Yeah,
Josh?
I mean, for sure. It's what we've really found a lack of is like those schools in 40 and 50 foot, right? Like
yeah,
those big schools, there's been none.
Nothing out deep.
You know, everything, the water temp and the time of year tells you they want to be real deep, but the rising water and slightly dirtier water wants you know, they may want to push shallow. So mm-hmm. it hasn't been great one way or the other.
When I say there's nothing out deep, I mean real deep. We caught them in 20 to 25, which, I mean, that's more of a summer depth.
I'm with you, dude. It's kind of an oddball winter deal for sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And so you think that phenomenon on the deep fish, you mentioned, and it makes sense. It confuses them on how to position themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe like a piece of structure in 40 feet typically, that's awesome. Now is like 55, whatever, right? Yeah. Whatever that change is.
I mean, my best example of that is Lake Pleasant. Lake Pleasant comes up from canal water coming in.
Every year does the same thing.
Every year in October, right? And you can be on the best schools of fish out deep, you know, off a point, and the water's coming down all summer, and they just move out, and you can find
just
them every time.
Just following it all
right?
the way out. Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden October hits, and the water starts coming up, and they're non-existent. It just puts them in a funk, I think.
They probably just go pelagic, you think? Do you think they just go, like, chill somewhere? And
yeah, so
you know.
I don't think Roosevelt's going through that drastic of a change because it's not coming up that fast, but it's definitely
enough to
we're
kind
seeing
of throw it off.
And a couple of our lakes, too. And, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of other fishing around the country today, so we won't make this all about Arizona, but we've got a couple other lakes that are typically, like, easy to catch fish on. I mean, anyone can just go there and beat the banks and catch 15 or 20 fish on a normal day, and it's easy to go there and not catch a fish right now. So interesting.
That lake's also coming up. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's dirty. They're dirtier than normal, and they're slowly coming up. So,
you know, in the desert, we don't get a lot of water, obviously. But boy, when we do, whether it's snow melt or snowpack in the winter or rain, but boy, it comes in torrents when we get it. And that's just the winter we've had.
And I
think
people throughout the country probably think we're weird talking about when the lake comes up fishing stuff. Because I think in some of those shallower reservoirs in the southeast, when the water comes up, those fish go straight to the bank.
That's
right?
A good, yeah. And it's
just,
there's a fine
just
line.
Just doesn't happen here,
right? You like a foot is good, right? But you know, there's times too where it floods up into the woods and it's terrible. You know, there's
just scatters.
There's times
out.
Where yeah, I mean, last year around the South and the Midwest, we had such a wet winter that lakes were 10 feet high, 15 feet high, and good luck.
That's when you hear stories about people like deflecting square bills off of like the handicap parking sign in a boat ramp parking lot and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, exactly,
right?
Yeah. Dude. It's way up. There's water where there's not supposed to be water, and you know when it gets in the woods like that, it's up into parking lots. There's so many places for those fish to hold
crank,
on.
You have to crank the parking lines, the white lines. They
well, that's
relate
it, right?
To those.
Like I'm on a pattern. I'm looking for park benches next to bathrooms.
Got to have the bathroom nearby.
Well, yeah, it's got a scent element that they like. Josh, what's up with you, man? I see some tan lines on your face. Where you been?
I was in Florida all
sipping
week.
Sipping Mai Tais.
Yeah, not quite.
Schmoozing.
We were in Sandestin. It's a nice area, man. I mean, Sandestin's a cool area.
Where's that at? North, south, east, west?
It is up in the panhandle on the coast in Florida. So I was there, I think it's the third year in a row I've been to this event, but it's they call it Bass Pro University, and it's a Bass Pro Shops event where the store managers and department leads come out for fishing and marine. So they'll have, you know, 100 employees, managers from the stores around the country from Bass Pro and Cabela's, probably more like 200. And it's basically kind of a classroom setting. And, you know, some of the brands, the bigger brands in the stores will send out reps or anglers that know the product to give classes on the product. Mm-hmm. The new products coming out, how to use them, how they relate to an average angler. So that's what I did. It was fun, man.
So you become essentially a teacher.
Professor Bertrand.
Yeah, in front of like 200 people?
They break them up into classes. Okay. So it's like, you know, 20 to 40 in a class.
Is that nerve-wracking to you at all?
No, because you know what you're talking about, right?
It's Josh Bertrand. That is why he's not nervous.
Far from that, dude. Dude, I had
totally
some
kidding, dude. I'm totally
horrific
kidding.
class presentations when I was in high school and in community college, man. But This is a piece of cake because you're talking about something that you love and you know about and
just guys like are cool, right? Seminar. I mean, we're just
and yeah, for sure. The audience is educated. They're paying attention.
A shared passion.
And they're asking good questions.
Cool.
It's man, I've given a lot of seminars like, and I appreciate anyone that comes to any seminar. But dude, when you're given a seminar in a public place, it's one thing if it's set up, you know, and it's been promoted and the people come for the seminar, but dude, it's brutal to get up and do a tank demo in an expo or something like that because you'll have
three people.
You've got such a diverse crowd there. Mm. You've got five people that are like intently watching, 10 people that are like
casually passing by here
for 5 minutes. Yeah, you got five more that are casually passing by and stop, and so people are coming in and out the entire time and just pointing at the fish and laughing at the fish, and that's brutal. They're not paying attention.
Super silly. See who's listening.
That's funny, dude. That's a great test. But this is different because everyone's paying attention and they're just a great audience. But
cool,
dude. The highlight of the week for me, on my way out there, in airport security in Sky Harbor in Phoenix, there's a big dude. He looked like an ex-athlete or something, but he had a service dog, a big German Shepherd, and there's like no one in security, but they've got, as you know, how that line wraps around in most of these airports, you know, they've got the tape that you just got to go
back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, this dog just starts dropping logs like at the mouth, or I'm sorry, not at the mouth. This is my fishing talk, at the mouth of the creek.
Yeah.
He starts dropping logs in the front of this serpentine line, dude. So he drops like 10 big logs, and it's like every turn there's like one here and then another one 10 feet further, another one 10 feet further, and thankfully I'm in front of this guy. I don't have to walk through it, but
dude, it's like the kids movie where they're dropping breadcrumbs. The dog's just leaving a trail, so in case he has to come back, he's like, yep, know that one.
100%.
What was the guy doing? Was
so the weird
out?
Thing is
updating his social media, not paying attention probably.
He acted like he didn't know the dog was doing it, of course.
No.
You know,
the other way.
I don't know. I mean, the dog, there's no way that he doesn't know this. So he gets up to get his ID checked, and I'm already through, but I'm paying attention now to see what happens.
Do you drag your bag through it?
One guy's like, hey, it you know, that. He's like, it happens. The dog goes when he has to go, and he has to go. You can't control that. And, I mean, dude, he's right. He should have definitely brought it to their attention on his own. And some other lady that works for TSA comes up screaming. She's like, did you even try to pick it up? Did you even, you know. I can blame him for
maybe
not picking it up. But, yeah, he needs to.
Exactly.
He needs to, like, bring it to someone's attention and offer and say, hey, do you have anything I could use to try to at least clean part of this up? But anyways, it was quite a little circus, and it made me think of a couple of funny fishing stories, you know, as twisted as that is. You know,
well,
that dog had no better place to do that. And we've been there on the boat a few times, and I'm going to send this one over to Nick. He's got a classic story that
we all bring our nicknamed expertise to this table. Mine just tends not to be so much of the fishing variety.
It was fishing related.
Technical fishing variety. Yeah, you know, I think maybe it's the early morning element of our beloved passion that just disrupts your morning routine, right? And so, like your German Shepherd friend at the airport, years and years ago, I don't do a whole lot of urban fishing anymore, but there was a time in my life it was pretty fun. And we have a buddy who was thinking that the fishing was pretty hot at this place called Tempe Town Lake, and it's, you know, it's pretty urban. It's very urban.
It's right in the middle of downtown Tempe.
Right in the middle of downtown Tempe. And, you know, it's pretty close to the downtown Phoenix, too. So you get a pretty solid transient population that's doing their thing. And so, I don't know, it's probably like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. And you can put a little boat on it, right? So we have I can't remember what he had. I think it was like a little aluminum V-hole or something that we launched.
It's troll motors only, right? So it was a boat that you could push
like
with a trolling
motor.
Like
a 10 or 12 foot, you know, it wasn't spacious by any means. It was just like a little boat. And, you know, it's like nature calls, right? Ace Ventura style. And luckily, there's this really strategically placed, you know, very large portable toilet. Like one of the, like the deluxe models, like the big one. I think it's kind of like, you know, for all types, you know, maybe like a handy capable, accessible,
that's
something
cool.
Like that. Yeah, so I'm like, oh. You know, sometimes the water's part, and there it is. So, you know, it's building up and it's building up and it's time, right? Like it's time. So I make my way down to this heaven sent portable toilet thinking that no problem. And I get there and I mean, it's 4:30 in the morning. There's no one around. It's like just us. And I grab on that handle and the dang thing is locked. I'm like, there's no other vehicles in the parking lot. Like, who is in my toilet? Like,
it's getting more desperate by the second.
You know, you start like weight on left foot, weight on right foot, twitching back and forth, a little bit of a clench from here and there. And I'm like, okay, like, I know you can't accidentally lock these things on the way out. And lo and behold, someone had adopted that as their nightly, you know, that was where they laid their head at night.
Oh.
And, you know, I'm beating on this thing like, hey, bro, I need to use your house for a second. Give me like 3 minutes and you can have it back.
He didn't let you in, huh?
Oh, no. He was probably all warm and cozy in there, you know, breathing deep with all that aromatherapy he had going on.
Oh.
And this is a family program, and we're going to keep it at that. Suffice to say that the nickname of this story was Red Dawn, and it had much less to do with the color of the sunrise that morning than it did the deposit on the sidewalk. Drops mic and rolls on. So thanks for that one, Josh. That was that's one of my crowning stories.
Dude, didn't you say they were like a couple like hikers, like, or not hikers, but like morning joggers or power walkers that were area when it was happening?
Absolutely, because the deposit occurred on a fairly busy sidewalk that's part of like a, you know, Tempe Town Lake is just a couple of inflatable dams on a riverbed. So it's, you know, it's a great place to exercise because you can do laps around it. And so, yeah, much to the horror of a few power walkers, they got the full show.
I'm speechless.
Rob is speechless. I wish we had
any part of this conversation.
Yeah, Rob doesn't want the volleyball to be lobbed back over to him.
No, I'm good.
Did I tell that story too graphically?
No, it was funny, dude. Yeah. We'll cut it out if we have to. I don't think we will, though.
Okay, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because that's and maybe I'm just, you know, delusional thinking that everyone goes through those experiences in early morning fishing. But when jokingly Josh was suggesting this title, it's like, hey, man, I got material. How many hours do you want this one to be? Because for whatever reason, man, it brings it out.
And we won't go too far. I just thought it was funny. And I've got one other silly little thing that happened to me that I'll throw on before we throw it back to the fishing. But, dude, so it was no airport. It was no Tempe Town Lake. But we had a Bassmaster tournament, Elite Series tournament in 2014 on the Delaware River out of downtown Philadelphia.
I know this story, and it's a good one.
And it was a wild tournament. Like, no one.
Didn't you say there's like green toxic sludge?
Yeah, it was a wild. I mean, dude, it's downtown Philadelphia. There's no natural shoreline. Like, right? Every inch of shoreline, unless you got way, 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 way off the beaten path, was literally just concrete, seawalls, businesses. Just absolutely as urban as you could ever have a tournament, right? And yeah, like one day I'm running down the river and literally the water is electric lime green. I'm like,
how do you even make
what that? Is that? You know? And then I thought I was going crazy. So I go up to another competitor that was running down. I'm like, do you see that? He's like, yeah, what's going on? And then like 10 minutes later, it's back to just normal color again. It was
wow.
There was some type of something they got dumped into there, you know? It was weird, dude. But anyways, every morning, the best part about that tournament was the Wawa gas stations. Have you guys ever been to a Wawa on the East Coast?
Nah.
Some of the listeners back east, it's like QT on steroids. It's so much better than any other gas station I've been to. They've got like great food, you know, super service. Just like it's the perfect morning stop. They would kill it out west. But anyways, I stop in and get my normal Wawa, you know, lunch in the morning, and I've got a little plastic Wawa bag that it's in the cooler. And dude, I start to feel the urge like in the middle of the day, and there's like, same thing, there's nowhere to go, and it's a rough area, dude. I'm not just like gonna get off at some random
boat.
Business and desert my boat, you know. I don't know what to do. So dude, I just go out to the middle of the river and just use this Wawa bag, man.
No.
It was so uncomfortable. And like a helicopter's flying over my
the ghetto bird goes by with the spotlight down. Hey, you. Oh, man.
Josh's Wawa bag.
Yeah.
Dude, so, another very much less disgusting thought that popped in my head. You know, my favorite, I love Stripes. That gas station for me calls me out.
That's
don't know
more
if that's
of a Texas deal.
Yeah.
But are those the big, giant ones?
That's Buc-ee's.
Okay. You can see gas.
Oh, yeah. That's the Buc-ee's.
And those are amazing, too, right? Dude. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, they're Buc-ee's take the cake.
But, dude,
I
remember
take back my Wawa.
The
statement.
Stripes at Zapata, Texas. It was like that Falcon tournament early on in your Elite Series career. I was there. I was lucky enough to do it. And I remember the Stripes breakfast options just blew me away, man. They had like in-house made refried beans, chorizo, like all sorts of burrito options. Those flour tortillas were like either made in store or brought in. Like, I don't know, if I had that type of gas station thereby near me all the time, it'd be amazing.
Heck yeah. So, I'd hit them every chance I get going through there.
So yeah, so write us in so Josh can take advantage of all the good gas stations across the country.
So my contribution to this, these stories.
Enlightening conversation. Yeah.
I drove from Phoenix to Elephant Butte, New Mexico.
Yeah.
It was a Bassmaster tournament years ago. It had to be 90.
That's a cool lake. I've only been there once.
It had to be 98. It was a long time ago. And I drove all the way from Phoenix, launched my boat to go pre-fish. It had to be prior to the official practice. I get on the water, and I have that urge, of course. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I didn't think much of it. I'm going to the bank. I'm going to grab my toilet paper. Wasn't in the boat.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I had
what
one.
What did you sacrifice?
Well, usually you come back with one sock or whatever, right? And I wish I had, because I grabbed a towel that was
Crocs.
In the back of my boat. And little did I know, I'd wiped gas or something up with it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That story's over. You can,
Yeah, right. Fill in the blank. All you need is the setup. The punchline is already baked in.
That was a rough day.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Nice. Dude, I'd love to go to Elephant Butte, man. It's
Have you ever been there?
Never. Nope. And
way below average fishing.
But it's just scenic, right? Yep. It kind of reminds me.
It's just another western lake I had never been to. And I guess it's got, maybe it got caught some water last year, but it's got some it's had extremely low water
for many, many years. Yeah. The stories of it had to be the 80s, right? Guys going up and flipping beaver dams up in the river. And I heard a really cool story, and I don't know how much truth there is to it, but there was a guy that won a tournament up there, and the way he won it was there was all these cobwebs from, was it stick to stick, or was it, you know, like beaver dam to whatever it was, he could tell where someone had not flipped because there was still a cobweb. Does that make sense? Kind of weird,
that's
right?
That's pretty hilarious.
The bait
that's
hadn't
cool.
gone through it.
I don't know if that's just a, you know,
tall tale,
or what, but I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, so. it's like your mat, you know, you can see all the frog lines coming across the mat. That's
so there's
a western version of cobweb over a beaver dam, dude.
Right. Yeah. So there's, I mean, there's very, very few things in fishing that you can tell someone's been there, right? It's not like when you're out hunting, you see foot tracks or,
like,
you know, you have.
I remember laying a golden goose-sized egg in one of my first tournaments at Elephant Butte. It was through the TBF, and somehow...
Now, you were in Navajo, right?
No, man. I'm thinking, well, who knows? It's 3 o'clock Hawaii time. But I thought it was that, but I just remember, like, I still to this day am below average, but I remember just getting my teeth kicked in by the boater, and same as the Larry Hardy story. It's like, all right, man, you can... Boat's yours, like, I'm good. Like, you could have, and I was like, I don't know, like, I got nothing, man. Like, I've watched you catch them all day, and I can't catch nothing behind you. But I took in a lot of scenery. But yeah, was that Navajo, man?
Yeah, that was.
You know my past.
I know you've been in Navajo.
Were you with Scooter?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Navajo.
Okay, well, disregard everything I said.
Yeah, Elephant Butte is, it's a big lake. Some of the roughest water I've ever been on is in that.
Really?
No kidding, dude.
Oh, man. Huh. Yeah, it was.
Bigger than meat or same?
Similar, I mean, but it's just. It's that lake where it just blows right down it, and you cannot get away from it.
You can't get out of it.
Yeah. But the first time I fished there, I literally went, I was probably the second or third Bassmaster Invitational I fished out here, and I think I went 6 days without catching a fish.
Oh. It was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to admit that, but
sure.
The second time I went, I know I didn't catch a limit either day, any day, and I still finished 11th. So it was, it was tough.
Brutal, man. Yep. That's crazy.
Yep.
Do some soul searching on that, right? When you're just sitting there catching nothing.
It's really funny. I was just looking at, and I don't know why, I was looking at standings of some of those tournaments back in the day, and I saw an Elephant Butte one, and pretty wild how, like, the Western guys that were in the top of it were, like, the, you know, big finesse fishermen.
Mm.
You know, Aaron Martins and Brett and those type of guys that were drop-shotting before it was really a a deal.
Is that was that maybe one of the ones that Brett talked about
that's
on the podcast?
Exactly,
like the
one
first drop shot tournament.
Yep, yep. Kota Kiriyami did good.
Interesting. These, how about that, dude? That's cool.
Yep. All these guys that were on to that deal first, you know, because that was when, you know, if you finesse fished, you split shotted. You didn't drop shot. So nobody split shots now. I bet you'd kill them doing it, right?
Seriously. Yeah. Yeah. You know? It's a good point.
What's old is new and new is old. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Add that one to the list of something to bust back out this year. Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Well, that's cool. Let's roll it back over to a little bit of Florida talk. We've got a lot of listeners in the Southeast and then a lot of listeners around the country that either, you know, would like to fish Florida, have fished Florida, and now's the time of year where you want to go down there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an absolute treat to be fishing in shorts when around the rest of the country, even out west like this, I mean, we're not fishing truly in shorts, right? I mean, right. we're talking about tougher wintertime fishing.
Yeah, by 1 o'clock, though, right? We've taken all of our layers.
Yeah, you definitely can.
Not yesterday. Yeah. It's cold,
I mean,
man.
It's still winter, man.
You can wear shorts on the bank, but when you're on the water, man, it's still cold. Yeah. So. But
Florida, I mean, it's you know, you get a lot of 75 degree days. The lows are 65, and the bass are already starting to spawn down there. One of the main differences on the bass fishing side in a lot of Florida, on a lot of Florida lakes, is the water has to cool down enough for the fish to spawn. Whereas it's opposite everywhere else, right? I mean, it barely ever gets down to 60. Like if it's in the 50s, they've had a massive cold front. If it's 57 or 58, it's brutal. So once it cools down enough, you'll start seeing some spawn in like January, and it'll go all the way through like March down there. And it's on a lot of your typical reservoirs, the bass are sharing like the shallow flats and pockets and stuff like that to spawn. That's why they don't all spawn at once, right? Like they have to share the habitat. So exactly, they take turns. And in Florida, it's similar, but they're doing it on the hard bottom areas. Okay. So like the spawn lasts for a long time on a lot of those lakes because so much of the lake has a mucky bottom and X amount has actual hard bottom or grass.
Something
they'll spawn on certain types of grasses like lily pad stems. They just need something hard. So
what's the approach to find the hard bottoms?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, man. You know, you could do it old school way and literally just stick your rod down in the water, and that's more effective. I mean, your electronics, when you're in 2 feet of water, man, your electronics aren't that great anyways, right? So, you know, you stick your rod in the water. Certain types, if you learn what types of grasses grow on hard bottom, that's a really big deal. And then it'll be kind of the same way year after year after year. But, there's some lakes have so much soft bottom and silt bottom that they have to use, like, the pads and stuff like that. And you'll see guys fishing really slow with a worm or a jig or a lizard crawling it through the pads. And that's those are spawning bass a lot of times.
And that's because you're not actually seeing the fish you're trying to catch, but more just kind of, like, dragging it through the sweet spot?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's definitely going to be times in lakes where you can sight fish down there, but a ton of that springtime fishing when you're targeting the big ones down there is going to be, blind fishing.
Because that water's
where we think they're on beds.
The water's almost a coffee color in a lot of those lakes, right?
It's a perfect way to put it. Coffee without cream. Just
correct.
Panic, man. Yep. And it's clearer than it looks. Like sometimes you don't see through it well, but sometimes it'll look like that, and then you can actually see down like 3 feet, you know, but the bottom's so dark, it kind of all blends. But if you'll see like
put
a white bed.
Something.
Yeah, or a bait, you know, you can see quite well. But it's interesting, too, because Florida's June bug country. When you guys have fished down there, have you fished a lot of June bug and black and blue?
Yeah, June bug, worm, June bug, this. I mean, it's amazing how the colors are down there. But I guess it's due to the watercolor, right?
It's got to be. You know, June bug works everywhere. But, yeah, June bug in tannic water, there's something special about it. It works really well up north, too. I've kind of – there's a lot of tannic water on northern fisheries when you get up into some of the grassier areas and creeks and stuff like that. And I've found June bugs really good up there.
Have you fished Okeechobee, Toho? What have you fished?
Yeah.
Harris chain?
Okeechobee, yeah, the Kissimmee chain, which is Toho, Kissimmee, a couple other lakes, St. John's, Seminole, and then some smaller lakes down there. And I'm definitely not super experienced down there. Probably fished down there maybe seven tournaments, eight tournaments. But it's just a totally different style of fishing, man. It is so different.
Any of those lakes have any contour change at all to you?
A couple of them have small contour changes, but, I mean, you're literally – it's the first time – I remember the first time I – had ever fished down there. It was the St. John's River. And, dude, it was like, I was so out of my element and so uncomfortable. Like, I mean, it's, you look around and it's so vast. Everything looks good. There's no contour.
You're
trained to look for contour. Exactly, dude. I mean, it's, you're looking for me, I like to look for like really specific stuff. Like I like to look for a specific rock pile or a specific break or, and out there anything. It was like, you're looking for an area. You're looking for a couple football field size area that's got some fish in it coming in to spawn or just doing something in your fishing areas. I mean, how did you feel your first time when you fished? Was it Okeechobee?
No, I fished the Kissimmee chain, and I was completely lost. Like, eventually I figured out that basically your drops and your structure, your contour changes where the grass points and grass edges and stuff like that. And,
yep.
I ended up catching some small fish out on some points of grass and stuff, but I definitely was not a contender.
Rob, that stuff is all subsurface though, too, right? I mean, is it? So how do you go about seeing or finding that?
Just, well, we didn't even have the electronics then to find it.
You just
stumbled
feel into it,
kind of. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was clueless. I caught a limit every day, but I was not even anywhere near what the guys
needed
were catching down there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and so as people from out west, obviously, Josh, you've been there a handful of times, but yeah, I would be the same way, thinking like, oh well, there's going to be indicators, of where the fish are going to be outside of the water, or at least contours and stuff like that. That is like just a 180 degree reversal from out here. So Josh, when you talk about those areas, is it the vegetation that exists in certain areas over other ones that makes the fish come to it? Or is it just football sized areas that, I mean, like what makes those football sized areas good? I mean, not
that's
to
a good
point
question.
Down,
yeah,
is it,
seriously.
Is there a lot of science? Like what is this?
Well, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's having the right types of grasses.
Mm-hmm.
Again, goes back to the hard bottom if you're anytime around the spawn. And then again, after the spawn, man, you got the bluegill spawn too. So like, that's still, that hard bottom's going to be conducive to the bluegill spawn, and the big bass are going to hang around the bluegill. So a lot of the fishing down there revolves around that.
Hard
you've
bottom.
Got some, a lot of those lakes have a current, right?
Okay.
So like once you get into the warmer months and then again the cooler months, they have their version of like structure fishing. And their version of structure fishing is maybe not fishing a break that goes from 20 to 40 feet, but it's fishing a shell bed that was created by current. And that little shell bed, they'll use similar techniques, man. It's going to be Carolina rigs, crankbaits, topwaters, but they're fishing over the shell bed. And they'll school up. I mean, dude, you can absolutely unload on them. Yeah, they've got something to relate to. And
that's where you'll see those guys out in the middle of Toho above the lock right there.
Yep.
And a lot of tournaments are won right in that area, but it's just random. There'll be 20
boats. Because
those
things probably change with the current too, right? I mean, those shell beds get established and then probably don't last. I don't know, but that's
a good question. I don't know. I don't know on that one. Yeah, if they change or not. But yeah, I mean, areas that have a lot of current, it washes all the silt off of them, and that's where you're gonna have the exposed shells and you've got the current. It's just the buffet line.
Yeah,
it's just like anywhere else with current. So,
yeah.
Okeechobee seems to be a little different animal, isn't it?
A little bit. It's I would say out of all the lakes, actually, Toho's really got some fantastic grass. It's really healthy right now. Okeechobee, they've done a ton of spraying, and both times when I went there in the past, it was on a as far as the grass goes, it was on a decline already. They had already been spraying, but apparently, it's gotten out of control down there, man. Like out of control. They've sprayed a ton of grass. And we've got a tournament for Major League Fishing coming up there in February. And we can't get any information, but just in my research from looking online and talking to a couple of my competitors that went down there and looked at it, they said it's so different. There's no submerged grass. You've got your bank grasses and your tule berms and stuff like that, but there's like no hydrilla. The hydrilla is the key. I mean, the hydrilla is the key. Eelgrass is on the spawn. Eelgrass is a big deal because they spawn around eelgrass, and you don't have any of that, so it'll be totally different. Fish are still in there, but
what's the reason for them to spray it? I don't know.
I'm not, there's a whole ordeal going on down there, man, and I know it's political, and I'm not educated enough to talk too much on it. I mean, it's not like the lake's got a bunch of houses on the shoreline where the homeowners are like complaining about the hydrilla and milfoil, man. Mm-hmm.
spraying it for the wakeboarders.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the gator bait, dude.
Don't like it.
Yeah, gator bait.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. I don't know what the deal is with that, but I know there are a lot of angry fishermen down there, and we'll see how it is.
So.
I mean, yeah, we'll see how it is, but I know a lot of that economy in that little area revolves around the lake, man. I mean, there's a lot of agriculture down there, and I think that is a factor. Mm-hmm. In that situation. Mm-hmm. Yep. But that lake is a big deal, man. It's one of the top bass lakes in the country.
And it's just the classic, right? Like if you talk to someone who just knows a teeny little bit about bass fishing, odds are Okeechobee.
They never pronounce it right though.
Yeah. It's the O Lake.
It's funny too, like looking at our schedule for this year, like you're totally right. If it's someone that's not just like a super well traveled or well versed fisherman, they'll see Okeechobee and they're like, dude, I bet you're stoked for that one. And out of the whole schedule, that's probably like, no offense to anyone down there, but it's probably like on the lower on the list just because I know how tough it's gotten with that spraying. So
totally different conversation if there weren't those factors in play.
Yeah, right? If this was 5 years ago, or maybe in 5 years, if things can turn around, I mean, dude, the lake's got some freaks in it. It's unbelievable. And I had a blast when I went a few years ago. I had an absolute blast. I caught him on a vibrating jig and did my best bread impression, and had a good tournament, man. It was great. I didn't catch any like eights or nines, but I mean, I caught a bunch of 3.5 to 5 pounders. It was fun fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. One cool thing about Florida, and here's one of my really deep, thoughtful things, is that I went on a Disney, is it Disney World or Disneyland? Whatever one is Florida versus California.
Disney World.
Yeah. We went there for a handful of days, and the first day we're walking across, that is so spread out that you log like 60 miles a day just walking, and that's before you even get in line to go do something. But one of the parts of it, I think it's the Magic Kingdom or whatever, has quite a bit of water. And so, like, you're going over bridges and walking around. And, like, the very first bridge we walked over, I peeked over the side because it looked kind of fishy. And, dude, there was probably, like, a 4.5 or 5 pounder positioned next to a piece of wood. Dude, and you could just see him there, like, oh, give me anything. Like, I could catch that. They're probably not. But you know what I mean? It's like, you could just tell he was just doing fishy stuff, man. He was sitting behind a log, like, just hanging out, but
they run fishing trips in there, guide trips.
Yeah, did you fish? I'm surprised you guys didn't actually do a trip, because that was what you guys would always do.
Yeah, well, no. This is with kids, right? I wasn't little.
Oh,
this was a couple years ago.
You were still little.
I had an 18-month-old.
Yeah. Is.
I wasn't little, he says. Whatever.
Well, little in certain areas, right? Mentally. How much maturity? Yeah, thanks. With friends like you.
Thank you
right?
for saving that one.
Yeah,
all
don't
right,
worry. That's what I'm here for. But that was pretty cool. And they had like a little riverboat you could go around in, and so I didn't know that. So you can go in there and fish Mickey's Pond, huh?
They have a full-blown guide service there.
Maybe I should get a job there, dude. I found a 5-pounder. It can't be that hard.
Yep. I think they use live bait too,
dude.
Then
the live
totally
bait thing down
me.
There.
Yeah.
Shiners.
It's
right?
Unbelievable how good shiners are, man. Like, you could. There was one spot we were fishing there a couple years ago. This is back to another Okeechobee story, but dude, we are in Harney Pond. It's a section of Okeechobee. It's the metropolitan area of the lake. It's where it goes down a lot of times. And on this field of grass, you've got like Kevin Van Dam, Brett Height, Aaron Martins, David Walker, Ott Defoe. It just goes on and
talent
on and on,
just
dude.
Stacked up.
Some dudes that can catch fish, and no one's catching fish. And a boat comes up like a bright, like a teal center console guide boat with shiners, rolls up into the middle, and it's got like a family, like a couple guys, a
Nick's
couple women, a couple kids.
It.
Yeah, seriously, dude. And they just start throwing their shiners out. 4-pounder, 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 5-pounder, 3-pounder, 6-pounder, 4-pounder, 7-pounder. We're just like, we're idiots. Like, it's amazing the power of live bait down there. It's unbelievable. And, and that's, dude, it's one of the things that, like, those shiner boats just get bird dogged by the bass fishermen, the tournament fishermen all the time, because they just know where they're at. And the dudes are looking out for those boats. But it's frustrating when they come by and they just start, you've been working your butt off to try to catch one, and they just come in and just rail them.
Yeah. Well, it's like, well, you know, in your other spot.
How often do you get that story from your clients here in Arizona when you're guiding? We went to Florida and caught 10 pounders and 7 pounders
all the time.
Yeah, so clearly you suck, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I was the first Florida fishing trip I took. I think we joked about this on a previous episode, but I caught my personal best forever, and it was on a shiner, and I was buck toothed and bowl cut wearing. So I was, you know, this was 2 years ago. And I remember vividly, though, man, the boil under the pad when that thing ate the... we were just pitching them, right?
No
pitching
kidding.
Them to structure. And the man, it just... Yeah. Because we don't get to do a ton of live bait fishing in Arizona, right? Like, I think out west, even so, it's like there's strict regulations about, like... I don't know if Arizona is much, but I know, like, in Wyoming, like, using live minnows is pretty much illegal anywhere because they're so concerned about introducing species. You know, so it's like that was an exciting experience, man. Because
the three of us had a Florida-esque type trip to Canyon a few years ago.
That was straight up as good as any trip could get in Florida.
Yeah, our guide was able to cast net some live shad for us. That was Rob. And
that doesn't happen very often, though.
And then I got my Steve Nash on, and I assisted Josh with, like, what was that, maybe a 7-8 pounder? I hooked him for you.
That was
broke him off.
That was Rob, dude. Rob caught
Rob,
the fish.
Oh, so
yeah, and we
welcome.
Talked about it on our first episode. Remember that, dude?
Yeah. So you're welcome.
Oh, yeah.
I know you haven't caught a lot of 8-pounders, so I wanted to spoon feed you that one.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I did need my hook back, so thanks.
Oh, yeah, you did get your hook back. But live bait fishing's fun, dude. It's awesome. And we're talking about how tough fishing is out here. When you're guiding right now, if we could use some live shad,
we could flip that switch.
We would do it for sure. But it's just a different animal down there in Florida. And
sorry to cut you off. When are you? Is that your very first stop out of the gate?
It's the second, so it's going to be in late February. It's in like maybe 6 weeks, or no, it's actually in about a month. Things are coming up pretty quick, but that'll be in about a month. So I'm stoked for it. Even though we were talking about, you know, the fishing's not quite maybe going to be what it was at its prime down there, it'll still be good. If you're ever thinking about planning a trip down there, you really, of course, the spring is kind of ideal. But, you know, if you're fishing anywhere from January through March, you can expect the spawn. And if you're going for big fish, that's when you want to be down there for sure. I mean, that's when the females are exposed. And it's like a light switch, man. Like when the spawn happens down there, unbelievable. You see some unbelievable stuff. If you're there on the right day around a full moon, you can literally see it sometimes on some of the lakes. It'll be like 11, noon, 1 o'clock. Things start to warm up, and you will see them swimming by, you know, coming up onto these spawning flats and just showing up. Like, fished a tournament at St. John's a few years ago where we're on this massive spawning flat on Lake George. It's like the primo spawning flat of the lake, and same thing. Everyone's just catching little male bucks all morning, you know, 1.5, 1.5, 1.5. Everyone's got 8 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And dude, just like a light switch, at like 1 o'clock, everyone starts catching 6+ pounders. Like every 5 minutes, there's a group, someone in this group that's catching an absolute toad. It was amazing to see, but those fish were not there. They were physically not there an hour before. So it's magical when you time it right. And you're going to give yourself the best chance by doing that in the spring and doing it near a full moon. If you're visiting Florida later in the summer, which almost seems like visiting Arizona in the summertime, like maybe not a great idea weather-wise, but that's when you're going to get more numbers. Like if you go fishing with someone, or if you're lucky enough to find a shell bed or something like that, you can catch, you know, 30, 40 fish in a morning off of one little spot. And that can be pretty fun too, throwing a lipless bait or Carolina rig topwater, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny how sometimes the spawn reveals the big ones, and then they just disappear the rest of the year.
Ghosts.
It's very common in a lot of lakes, you know.
Mead. We talk about mead more than any other lake on this podcast, but that's how it is. A lot of lakes are like that. If they don't have, like, ideal habitat for those fish to sit in through the rest of the year, you know, a lot of them become, like, pelagic and swim in open water. And Lord knows what some of those Florida fish will bury up deep underneath cover, and you can catch them flipping and doing stuff in the summertime. But I don't know where they go, man. Like, the middle of Okeechobee is so vast and massive, and the water's really dirty out there in the middle. You wonder if there are fish that are living out there or not, dude. I don't know. No idea.
Yeah, it'd be cool to have like a tag, right? A biologist or something, be able to track that and see. It's just the mystery and mystic of big fish, right? Like, it's just cool. It's where do they go? What do they do?
Yeah. It's such and there's such a difference, I guess, between like Florida on the coast and then inland Florida. Like, and I say it lovingly because like inland Florida, they're more like my type of people, right? They're your bass anglers and and your blue collar. And then you get on the coast, man, and things change a lot all
there's
the way around
of
the
those
state.
People
That's what
on
everyone
Miami
thinks,
Beach.
You know? Exactly. Have you guys saltwater fished down there before?
Yeah, I have. I think I talked about it in a different podcast. My brother lived in Key West for a handful of years and went to Florida Keys Community College. He definitely got the brains in the family. And so we've had a lot of fun times and saltwater fishing more so than freshwater fishing. But you talk about like that state's just got it going on, man. Like you pick your flavor of fishing that you want to do. And because where you were at for your event last week, you know, the Gulf side of Florida is an awesome fishery too, man.
I would have loved to have saltwater fished when I was there, dude.
Like, talk about a cool place to raise a family and get your kids into fishing. Like, you just go catch them, right? I mean, there's snappers, sheephead. I mean, you just go find a pier or something and you can whack them, you know? That's cool. It's not always the case here. We don't have, like, programmable bites where you can just put a short attention span kid on 20 fish in an hour and then move on. You know, that's
super rare. Yeah, and that's every day down there.
That's been my experience on the Gulf side. And
there's a ton of guides down there that are, I mean, they're guiding every single day of the year, right?
You can make a good living as a saltwater guide in Florida if you know what you're doing and you know how to advertise.
And they charge quite a bit too, from what it.
Yeah, probably a little bit more in freshwater, right?
$600-$700 a day, isn't it?
I believe so, like a full day, like you know, inflation adjusted. This was a couple of years ago when I was down there, but yeah, that's totally reasonable. Have you guys ever done any, you know, flats fishing in saltwater?
I'd love to, dude. Nope.
Yeah, sometime do it. It's That's just a unique and really fun deal, you know, because stealth is such a huge part of that, right? Because have you guys seen kind of, obviously not as much trolling motor and much more a guy standing on a platform above the boat with a push pole. And he's kind of, you know, using that to leverage and move you around. And
there's a lot of stealth and skill involved there.
Totally. I remember one time my brother and I went on a trip in the back country. Where were we? We were outside. I think it was in Isla Mirada, and we wanted to catch redfish. And so we had fishing guides in general are super eccentric, but man, we got the most eccentric one ever. And I can be annoying, as everyone knows. And right out of the gate, I think I got that guy's, you know, he's just like, this guy never shuts up. Like, what's his deal? And I remember we got to the spot, you know, we had run pretty far, and it was so shallow. I mean, it's like at the deepest 18 inches, right? And I go to the cooler, and you can see tails off in the distance, maybe like 150 yards away, and we're working our way up. And my brother's on the front deck. It's his turn to go, and I'm sitting on the cooler waiting, and I'm like, you know, I could go for a Coke right now. So I open the lid on the cooler, grab a Coke, and just let the lid go, right? Dunk. Oh, man. He was so mad at me.
What'd he say?
Oh, he just profanity. You're like, what the hell are you doing? You know, just, I don't remember verbatim. The point of it was that I was an idiot. I had ruined everything. I should probably just fall off and drown. Like, it was funny. Like, he was.
That's a new approach I need to bring.
Dude, and we're paying. Like,
I don't get that.
Dude, paying like $600 to be, you know,
it's your
assaulted.
Day.
And you hear about that all the time by those, you know, and I don't want to loop all the flats guides into that because it's not like that. But, dude, you hear about that a lot.
It's common. I have a good buddy who doesn't guide so much anymore that still lives in Key West. But I met him he guided me, and he's an asshole, right?
No,
like, you are just not nice. And then somehow we became friends, go figure. But yeah, I guess maybe if you spend 300 days, 330 days on the water with inept, you know, jerk-offs like me, you just become really cynical and sadistic. But it was funny, man. I dropped that cooler lid, and I thought I was going to get punched in the face. Like,
that's
who's
crazy.
Paying who here?
Yeah, they get pretty salty, huh?
But what is really cool is, you know, when everything comes together, right? And so it's like you see a tarpon roll, or you see some tails pop up, and you know what will mess you up is that you've been standing there for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, scanning, not seeing anything, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh crap, like there's one, like get your crap together, get ready,
this
make
is what
the
you've
right
been waiting
cast.
For right here,
exactly. And then, you know, you freaking suck. And you like stand, you stand on the line and you cast short, or you land on the fish and blow it up. And that's, I think, why they're so angry, because they're like, are you kidding me? Like,
but you're fly casting, right?
Yeah, most of the time I had been, you know, in those trips fly fishing, and,
right,
you know, I'm not by any means very good at that, especially in those conditions. But even, dude, I've had days where, like, using a live crab or something, and I still just suck, you know, because you got to land it, right? Like, a lot of times the cast is so critical, you got to put that bait in, let's call it, like, a shoebox or a basketball rim-sized spot in front of the fish, close enough that he sees it, not so close that you spook him, you know, and you don't get to, like, miss reeling and try again. By the time you're creeping up on them, they know what's up, so you got to get it done, by and large. And it's rewarding, though. Like, when it happens and you come tight and you catch something, you know, whatever of those three species or four species that you target primarily, it's cool.
What's cool about that type of fishing is it takes a significant amount of skill just from the angler. The guide can't just drag you across the flat and get you, you know, right, get you hooked up.
It kind of like the joke about the shiner with the shiner fishing guide, where it's like, dude, just
there's
get
no
it in
skill.
The water, get it wet.
Right.
Out fishing Kevin Van Dam.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. That would be funny to just be like waving to him. I'd be like, hey, man, you should have caught this one. This would really help you right now.
That's funny. But do you think some of that saltiness comes from, like, competition with other guides? Do they, like, go out of the same harbor and then, like...
It's got to be almost 100%.
100% there's a fraternity of that, right?
And
not to be...
When they get back to the dock and they've caught two and their guide buddy or whatever you want to call it caught 10, there's probably a big deal.
Yeah,
that,
and I'm sure, you know, in those circles, there's just, like, a built-in handicap for your client sucking. Yeah. Right?
I do.
So,
I do know... We did a six-pack trip out of San Diego, and those guys, I mean, I broke off a fish just because I was on light tackle, and the dude was pissed because their numbers matter to them when they come to the dock.
Yeah,
they kill
for
everything.
Resale?
Ego.
Ego.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they document every fish caught, every fish, you know, brought in. And just literally their numbers mean a ton to them.
Well, in our beloved sport of fishing, ego is ever present, right? I mean, it doesn't matter what faction of fishing you're in. There's a huge population of ego, for better or for worse. Most of the time, I feel like it's for worse. But yeah, it's alive and well in those circles.
And I could care less that I broke the fish off. I'm like, I've got a bass rod with 20-pound line. Who cares, right?
Well, and
trying to
it was fun.
Do something fun and different. Yeah.
And sometimes in fishing, like I know in the like those shallow flats environments, a lot of times, dude, just like feeding a fish is a big deal. Like I haven't caught a ton of tarpon on a fly rod, but like you count eats. Like, okay, I mean, odds are you're not going to touch that fish, right? I mean,
that's a good point. And that's a fair way to do it.
Right. You fed the fish, you made the cast, you came to, because I mean, setting the hook on a fish that's cruising towards you, like line management and still coming tight on a fish whose mouth is entirely bone. Like the first time that happened for me, I was like, okay, if I get hit by lightning this afternoon, I hit something big on my list. I spent a lot of time trying to make that happen.
No kidding.
And what's cool is out there, right, the ocean, there's always something bigger that's going to eat whatever you're fishing for. And so there's this really cool area west of Key West called the Marquesas. And I think I talked about this on a different podcast, but there are big sharks over there. And so, man, I mean, you're working this flat, right? And it's not deep at all. It's, you know, certainly less than 5 feet, maybe certain areas 2-3 feet deep. And so you're seeing like rays, you know, small sharks, some snap, you know, just different stuff. And then all of a sudden, you'll see like an 8 or 10 foot hammerhead work in the same flat. It's like, damn, like that is not deep water. And that is a big animal.
That's amazing. It can get up there and do that. It made you uncomfortable.
Yeah, you know, you're on a boat, right?
So I got you. I thought you were waiting.
No, you're on a boat. If I was waiting, I would probably need new shorts, Red Dawn version 2. But that might be Red Afternoon. But what those hammerheads do, they eat tarpon, right? So it's like I hooked one time, and all of a sudden my guy's like, break him off, break him off, break him off. And I was like, the hell are you talking about, man? Like, I hooked one of these bastards, and he's still hooked. Like, I'm fighting this thing, and then I saw, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's because it wasn't a hammerhead. It was a bull shark that he had seen blow up, dude, just, like, totally blow up 100 yards away. Because as soon as they hear, you know, thrashing going on, that's the dinner bell. So, yeah, he's like, palm the reel, and I did, and I popped him off, and the fish was able to swim away. So it's amazing to think you could hook up to a 50- or 60-pound fish that is about to be eaten.
He was trying to save that fish's life. That's
exactly.
All he was trying to do.
Exactly.
Interesting.
He's like, dude, you fed the fish. You hooked him, like, job well done, ding on the scoreboard, bust that thing off.
That's cool, man.
Cool, yeah. And then that was my buddy. And so then later that night, I'd had a few beers and we were hanging out in a channel not too far from that. And I was all liquored up and I did a backflip off the polling platform, jumping into the water. He was like, "What are you doing? Like, get back in the boat."
There's bull sharks here, bro.
Yeah. I'm all liquored up jumping off the polling platform. My bad.
Thank God there's people to watch over you and take care of you.
Well, here for a reason, right? Maybe I need to get religious.
That's cool. It offers a lot, man. It's an awesome state to fish. And this episode has been brought to you by the Florida.
Yeah, Commission Tourism Board. They're our number sponsor. They give us like donuts and 23 cents a year. No, they don't. But
I don't know.
Arizona-centric. We gotta spread something in.
Exactly. And I guess that's about all we've got today. We've got another busy week coming up, but we're going to pump out a couple episodes, and I'm getting ready to hit the road here in about 10 days. I need to put a little bit more time on my boat and just do some business around town. Rob, you got a pretty cool hike that you're planning to do, man. You don't have to go too deep into it, but tell us a little bit about what you are wanting to get out of this.
So a little backstory. Last summer, we have an area called Superstition Wilderness, and last summer there was a big fire in there. It's an area where we like to hunt deer, and tomorrow we're just going to do a hike through. We're going to hike like a 10-mile trail and look at some of that country that you can't see from roads. I mean, it's all, you know, wilderness area, and just see what the fire did and see how it's coming back. I think we've had a super wet year, and I think it's a lot of the grasses and good stuff is growing back. You know, everybody thinks these fires are just terrible, right, for the wildlife. Sometimes it's the best
kind
thing
of the reset
happened.
Button
oh
it?
Totally. I mean, you get areas that
overgrown or
wildlife
mature.
Needs food, right? Mm-hmm. So you get stuff overgrown and trees and stuff just doesn't grow on the ground that they're going to eat. So you get a fire and it just burns off all that stuff, and now you have these big grass meadows. And in the long run, it's probably the best thing that ever happened.
It's a natural thing, right? Now that we have overpopulated certain areas and these are mostly man-made, it sucks. But by and large, I mean, that Mother Nature intended that, dude. That's just life in the West. There's probably some people in California that would beg differently. But ultimately, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's
unfortunately, it's human-started fire, which, you know, obviously
sucks.
It is what it is. But so we're going to get in there and look around. It's a beautiful area. There's tons of like Indian ruins. There's just so much history in the Superstition Wilderness.
And I don't think it really gets explored that much. One time I bought a very dicey manufactured home from a transient hippie, and that's a crazy story. That is a crazy
Please
story.
Tell us the entire story next podcast.
Yeah,
right now.
So long story short, I responded to one of my form letters, and this cat was living with his folks, and he was not young. I'm saying he's north of 50, living with his folks in Prescott. I drove all the way up to Prescott to get this cat to sign a contract to sell that property because apparently he lived in the 1700s. Like, you know, I called his parents' phone number, like no internet, no nothing. Dude, he inks the contract. I'm ready to give him his cash for it. He doesn't have a bank account. So
oh
then
my
I,
God.
Dude, I loaded him up and drove him to the Bank of America in Prescott.
You started a bank account for him?
Absolutely, dude. I sat there while this guy, I was like, do you even have ID? Like, you know, I'd done all my homework with the title company to make sure that this was going to be an insurable transaction, that everything was legit. It was so funny because this cat's opening up a bank account and he's ready to deposit whatever it was, like 45 or 50 grand. I can't remember how much I bought it for. Might have been a little bit more than that, but that's pretty close. Dude, he was like the celebrity in that branch that day because he's dropping a 50K check. It's like they got like the manager, the assistant manager. They're like shaking his hand, like Mr. Anderson or whatever. And he was like, you know, check this out. We have a Keurig over here. Would you like a cup of coffee? It's just
you just changed his world.
But so that weird rant was because this, you know, this hippie who's been dropping acid for decades. He's like, bro, I used to backpack in the Superstitions. You know, when I was a kid, he was an Arizona native, which there's like six of those. And he's telling these stories and he made it sound really cool. I've never done it, but I think you'll probably stumble upon some stuff that we're talking super close to the fifth biggest metropolitan area in the United States. And it doesn't get
it's rugged
any
terrain.
Yeah.
It's rugged terrain.
So that'd be cool, man. I'm excited to hear what type of out of body experiences you have up there with the Anasazi.
Yeah, should be interesting.
Is your, and you're going straight through and you're getting picked up on the other side by vehicle, or are you coming back out the way you come in?
I think we might just shuttle. So
just gonna Uber.
We might take two different vehicles.
Oh yeah, right
park
on.
One on one end and one on the other. So
perfect.
Yeah,
cool. It'll be cool to hear, man. Yeah, we'll be ready for that next time. And then, if the listeners have any feedback on show topics, guests you'd like to hear from, we've got some good guests coming up for sure. If you just have some ideas, something you want to hear, let us know. You can send me a message on Instagram at Josh_BertrandFishing, or you can drop it in our comment section. And there have been a few already in the comment section, so we can't reply to those. So
iTunes, right?
Anyways, on iTunes, we appreciate those. We're going to get to them and then keep them coming. But
and we just, man, like, I just want to say on behalf of all of us, like, we started this, we have a great time together. I mean, like, all three of us have been buddies for a long time. It's just, you know, it's really gratifying, and we appreciate so much the people that are listening, right? Like, we didn't know what to expect starting this. You know, obviously, Josh is a big deal.
Joking. Yeah, far from that.
He's a big
deal. He's right. We appreciate it.
Gosh,
big
man,
time.
Like, you have no idea. Like, those comments and, like, the feedback, even if you tell us we suck, we already know that. But, like, we just appreciate any love you guys or any hate you guys have. Like,
you can tell us we suck, but give us 5 stars.
Please. Yeah, please, and subscribe.
True.
First.
Yeah, yeah.
But no,
and share it on
yeah.
social media. But the fact that you want to, you know, that there are actually people that are willing to come hang out with us for an hour on a weekly basis, it's shocking and humbling. So
it's cool.
Yeah,
very humbling, right? Like, we appreciate it. And it good things are coming, man. Josh, you're going to go on tour now. We've got a mobile setup where you can interview a lot of different guys, and
we'll
get some cool stories.
We'll
out
be
of
bringing
that.
You guys some interviews from the road. We'll have a lot of stories from the road, but also interviews with the different guys. And
great things are on the horizon.
All right, guys, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Peace. Hey, guys and gals, thanks again for listening to this episode. I've got Josh Hogtied over there in the corner, so I hijacked this outro. We really appreciate every rating and especially enjoy each review, good or bad, but mostly the good. If you are enjoying this podcast, prove it by helping us spread the word. Share it on your social media, tell your grandmother, send a carrier pigeon, put up a smoke signal, anything is great. It strokes our massive egos and proves our legitimacy to our wives and family. Talk to you next week. Peace.